Poltergeists. Oh, the scariest ghosts of all. But are they really scary? Are any ghosts really scary? Yes, because we don't understand what they are. And we're frightened of what we don't understand. One of my many phrases, as I'm sure you may have heard before, is don't fear what you don't understand. But we do. And of course, the problem we've got is that Hollywood and TV have made everything like that scary, and we love it. We love to be scared. What about the reality behind poltergeists? What are they? Are poltergeists dead or are they still alive? Well, let me try and explain a little bit about it. Number one, when I'm asked if I believe in poltergeists, then I have to say, yes, of course I do. I believe in ghosts. The word poltergeist comes from the German word polter, which is the German verb to throw. And Geist, of course, is, as we all know, is this scary thing that gets you, a ghost. So it's a noisy ghost. Even to this day, in Germany, mothers and fathers still refer to, if their children are being particularly disruptive or noisy, they refer to it as poltering. So it's a noisy spirit. But is it a spirit? Or is it just an energy force? First question I ask is, are there any prepubescent children in the house? Girls especially, but boys and girls, children that are reaching puberty, that have got this awful anger inside them. They don't know what's happening with their own bodies. They hate their parents. The parents won't let them go out. They won't let them wear those tight jeans. They won't let them wear that short skirt. And they just hate everything about the world. And that energy that's inside them. Because remember that each one of us emits at least 2 kilowatts of electricity in a 24-hour period. And when you're gathering all this energy together, it is possible for you to be able to mentally move things with your mind. Because our thoughts have frequencies, and frequencies have weight. That means, guys, that we're really not that far from Star Wars and use the Force. We are mentally capable of moving things. In the same way as if you've got a key fob with a button on it and you press the button and the doors of your car open, the lights come on, or you're driving towards home and as you get closer to the gates, you press the button and your gates open on their own. 100 years ago, someone would have thought that was a ghost waiting there to open the gates for you. But as you now understand it, it's just energy. Today's magic will be tomorrow's science. So children are mentally capable of moving things, especially girls, as they're reaching puberty. So it could be that. That could be the problem. That could be the poltergeist, the noisy spirit, the spirit that's supposedly throwing things around. So in other words, from that point of view, poltergeists are alive. It's the person that's actually doing it. Or it could be someone that's in a very bad mental state, going through terrible traumas, and without knowing, their mental energy is making things move, throwing things around the room. It is possible. The second question I always ask is there a council house involved in some way? Because the number, obviously people have heard of the Pontefract poltergeist, they've heard of the Enfield poltergeist, and so if the council won't give the people a move to a different council house because they hate the neighbours or they want to move areas for whatever reason and the council won't move them, then there's no better way than inventing a poltergeist. Oh, the kids are terrified, they're being dragged out of bed, things are flying across the room, the family is terrified, everyone's moved downstairs out of the bedroom, and it gets into the local newspaper, possibly on the local TV programme, and before you know it, the council feel duty-bound to move you to another council house. It happens frequently. So there's a possibility to say that. For anybody, of course, that doesn't understand what a council house is, it's houses provided by the local council for people to rent, known as I say, a council house. But who knows? But anyway, what I've got for you today is to tell you what I believe to be one of the most fascinating poltergeist stories that I've ever heard. And it's modern. Because you must remember that although I believe that most ghosts are from an earlier period, those occurrences are still going on today, even though they are from an earlier period. So if the building has been removed, the ghost, and that's, of course, if it is a ghost, still believes that it's in its own house, in its own castle, in its stately home. Now, the other thoughts are, of course, is that it could be a dead person that can't appear in front of you. Remember, they haven't got a voice. They haven't got a voice box. They can't actually talk to you. They can't whistle. So one of the ways of trying to get your attention for help is to use someone else, use the energy from somebody else. And so one of the best ways of doing that is to try and attach themselves to the mind of an owner, the mind of someone that they can mentally influence to move things as a cry for help for themselves. And of course, the easiest way of getting into a mind is the mind of a child, because children's minds are much more open than adults, because a child of, say, 5 has got very little in their minds other than playtime, school time, tea time and bedtime. And so it's quite easy for a spirit to attach itself to the mind of an owner, as it's called, and use their energy to move things. A fascinating case I investigated a few years ago was of a house near a place called Swadlingcote in Derbyshire. The chap had lived there all of his life. It was a farmhouse. And then he got a partner, and she'd got a little girl of about 6. And they moved into the house. Now, when the little girl was in the house, she was always very lethargic, a little bit unhappy, and things started happening. Things moved, things disappeared. They used to hear the dog downstairs whimpering, and they'd go downstairs to see what was wrong with the dog, and the dog would be huddled in a corner, staring at something on the other side of the room. It went on for quite a long time. It got so bad that they actually brought in a priest to try and exorcise what they believed to be the ghost. But I believe that it was something to do with the little girl. I believe there was a ghost in the house. I believe the ghost had always been there. I think it was a previous occupant. But when the little girl came, the ghost found it very easy to do things. Perhaps the ghost wanted to leave the place, and it was a call for help. Now, when the little girl went to stay with Grandad for the weekend, her energy came back. She became the normal, happy-go-lucky little girl that she used to be before she came to the farmhouse. But when she came back to the farmhouse, back she went into her old ways, very tired, a little bit frightened, and lethargic. She actually used to refer to Mr. Ghost under the bed. Anyway, eventually, Clive sold the farmhouse for building land, and they built a small estate on his land. But the fascinating thing is that the house that was built on the site of the farmhouse remained unoccupied for many, many years. Who knows? Who knows? Is that ghost still there? Hopefully someone's bought it now. I hope they haven't got children. Anyway, what I'm going to tell you now is what I believe to be this fascinating story about what was called Derby's Eagle Centre. It was built in about 1975. And obviously, to build it, they had to knock down an awful lot of slum accommodation. It was known as Derby's East End. And places like Bloom Street, Eagle Street, Devonshire Street, Albion Place and Albion Street were all there. But originally, before then, there is a possibility that there could have been a castle at Derby. Because in 917, there was a ferocious battle in Derby between the Vikings and the Saxons. Ferocious fighting within the streets of Derby. When the fighting was over, Princess Ethelflaed, a fighting woman, a Saxon princess who led the army, the Saxon army, to drive the Vikings out of Derby, actually built a castle on the site of where the battle took place. And it is a possibility, of course, that some of the ghosts from the battle, because I'm a huge believer, as you know, in battlefield ghosts still being around, could be there. Anyway, they knocked everything down. There was no trace of the castle. Nobody ever found a trace of it at all. And they built the Eagle Centre. And before it even opened, The builders, some of them walked off site because their tools went missing. They saw ghostly figures wandering around. They heard bumps, bangs and crashes. And one or two builders actually walked off site and refused to come back and work there anymore. Anyway, as the shops were being taken by prospective occupants, an awful lot of poltergeist activity started to take place. It got very, very serious. In fact, it got so serious that the actual owners of the Eagle Centre took out a court injunction against the local newspaper to stop them from printing any of the ghost stories, A, for fear of stopping any shopkeepers from taking shops, and B, fear of people not going shopping there because of the ghosts. Anyway, it got so bad that the council actually brought out a pamphlet to help the shopkeepers to allay their fears of ghosts. But before I read a little bit of that, because I've actually got a copy of it, I'm just going to tell you one or two of the accounts that happened in one or two of the shops. Shop number one. Sightings have been made since the shop opened in 1975, although none of the original staff still remain. Sightings 2 weeks ago, perhaps typical. At 5 p.m, Mrs. Sharp, the manager, was at the cash desk, halfway down the shop opposite the stairs. She looked up to see a shadowy figure go down the stairs. Apparently, another assistant nearby saw this, but a subsequent investigation disclosed no one downstairs. No staff, no customer. The figure was described as a black or colourless shadow, but not on the wall. A hunched figure with no face discernible. Scarf or shawl around head, elderly, female, movement very smooth. Sightings and noises tend to be heard early morning or late in the day, every 2 or 3 months. Shop number two. Early on this day, one lady had heard a rustling noise coming from the area of the stairs. Footsteps were heard, although this was not unusual, as footsteps were heard nearly every day when there was no one else in the shop. The manager of the shop saw a long-haired girl leaning over merchandise racks at the rear of the store. On going to speak to her, he found no one there, and a thorough search revealed no one in the area. Workers in the staff room reported hearing and seeing coat hangers swinging on racks. A new girl, unaware of strange phenomena, reported seeing coat hangers swinging violently on a wall peg. There are also accounts of previous workers of shop two. Objects commonly found missing despite extensive searching. Objects would reappear next morning on top of a desk, often experience cold areas, often sense an atmosphere of unease, frequently felt as if she was being watched. On several occasions, Mary felt her bottom being pinched and from the corner of her eye was aware of a shadowy form. Another assistant, no longer working there, named Jill, came running downstairs one day. She had been vacuuming near the staff room when she saw, to the side of her, a man going into the staff room. She described him as having pinstripe trousers and black shiny shoes. Staff have often heard footsteps during the day when there has been no one there. Staff at the shop believe that it is haunted by a dentist who used to work at the back of the premises. Shop number three. In this shop, there were two guitars stacked in two cupboard boxes, one above the other, near the counter at the rear of the shop. The top box fell or was pushed by unseen hands and hit the deputy manager on the head. One lady present at the time described it as flying across the room, saying that it could not have fallen naturally in that direction. Over several months, more strange happenings occurred. One day, the shop manager was going upstairs when she noticed a shadow on the staff room floor as she passed. Thinking a colleague was in the room, she called out, and when there was no reply, she investigated the room, only to find no one there. Shop number four. Shortly after this shoe shop opened, it was Freeman, Hardy and Willis, by the way, it became apparent that strange events were occurring from which there was no logical explanation. At first, because of the strange sounds and banging noises, staff thought that someone might have been trying to break in, and they called the police, who checked the premises on several occasions, but could find no trace of anyone trying to break in and no explanation as to the peculiar noises. Another very peculiar incident, this time happening to a former security guard, concerns a young child which was observed wandering around a closed shop. Whilst doing his routine security rounds, John was shocked to find, when glancing through a window of a well-known clothes shop, a small girl, approximately 4 years of age, dressed in what seemed to be a very old-fashioned style, wandering the shop floor, clutching what he believes to have been some sort of soft toy. John became startled by what he had seen, believing that somehow the child had become lost and had accidentally been locked in the shop. He immediately summoned other security guards who brought the master key for the shop. They entered the shop and a thorough search was completed to reveal no one but themselves in the premises. As I said, it got so serious that the council, Derby Borough Council it was at the time, issued a pamphlet. The copies were called Your Poltergeists and How to Deal with It, and it was distributed amongst shop workers and managers of the shops. Here's just an extract from it. A. It's history. Number one, poltergeists are quite common and have been recorded for many hundreds of years. Two, at present, cases are being researched and documented in the United States, where the work of Dr. Ryan of Duke University and of Roll and the Morrises in England is noteworthy. Many people down the ages and many today have and are suffering from the pranks of their poltergeist. B. It's nature. Number five, it is not an illusion and can produce physical effects which can be weighed, measured and recorded, i.e. it can move things and it can produce noises. It is attached to and part of the mind of an owner or group of owners. The poltergeists feed on fear, although in fact it is harmless both to soul and body and is, in its way, a relief to the suffering mind. Its owner has no control over it and is unaware of his ownership. See how to deal with it. Once the pressures which have produced it are understood, the poltergeist will fade out. Where premises have been affected, a ritual blessing will greatly help to calm the atmosphere of strain and fear. Many members of staff from several of the shops experiencing problems did make themselves familiar with the pamphlet, but the phenomena still continued, and it was eventually decided that perhaps the only way to finally solve the ghostly dilemma was to hold exorcisms in the basement of one or more of the shops. A meeting was arranged, and the Bishop of Derby, along with several other clerical experts from Sheffield, was consulted on the matter, and a meeting held in the basement of one of the haunted shops. The result of the meeting was a decision that they would return and exorcise the building at close of business one evening, and this allegedly took place in early December 1983, and I am now informed that a further exorcism took place several months after the first one and was said to have worked better than the first. I actually, many years ago now, spoke to the curator of Derby Museum, and he was actually there. He went with the Bishop of Derby to some of the exorcisms in the premises, and he was actually in Freeman, Hardy and Willis's shop when he physically watched shoes flying out of boxes down in the basement in the stockroom. Guys, this is just quite bizarre, to say the least. It's real. It's modern. It means that it's still happening today. Whether they're just ghosts from the houses that used to be on Bloom Street and Eagle Street, people that have actually stayed behind in their houses, as I believe so often, or whether they're tormented souls still wandering from the Battle of Derby of 917, then nobody really knows. All I know is that this is real. There's no doubt about it in my mind. Ghosts exist. Poltergeist exists. What is a ghost, supernatural or science? And of course, the people's ghost stories, with stories of poltergeist in as well, are available at richardfelix.co.uk. And if you're looking for something to watch, because there's very little on television at the moment, then all the DVDs are available also on richardfelix.co.uk. See you soon, guys. Do sleep well. Don't have nightmares.